things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Did you know that if you grow mushrooms over a toxic waste site, chemical spill, or other polluted growing medium, that they will suck up the toxins into their fruiting bodies with such effectiveness that they're being studied for their ability to clean up tainted industrial sites? And it is called mycoremediation.
Wow!
Is that crazy?
That's cool. So it just, like, sucks the badness out of the ground?
It, like, sucks, like, radiation or, like, polluted, like, toxins that have, like, spilled into the soil.
So why do people eat mushrooms?
Well, because they're, like, farmed in clean soils.
Sometimes people go mushroom hunting in, like, random-ass forests.
Oh, I do. You don't go mushroom hunting?
I don't like mushrooms.
Oh, that would be a good reason to not go hunt for them, then.
No, I do not. But you're just eating random-ass mushrooms that are growing in the forest beds of God only knows what kind of bodies are buried in that forest.
Listen, I'd rather eat mushrooms grown out of dead body soil than, like, Chernobyl soil.
Accurate, also.
Yes.
But I stand by, you still don't know.
I mean,
what kind of soil you're eating.
Now stay with me on this for a second.
I don't know if you can talk me out of this.
So I'm not trying to.
Okay.
I'm going on a side path.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Cool.
So
cool.
You plant or sporicide or propagate, whatever okay. you do to uh-huh. make mushrooms
yeah.
happen.
Uh-huh.
You do that in like Chernobyl or like radioactive, whatever industrial sites.
Okay.
The mushrooms suck up the junk, correct?
Right.
And then you feed them to your enemies.
Oh, okay.
And now your enemies are poisoned.
Uh-huh.
But, like, nobody would ever trace it back to the mushrooms you fed them. Is the perfect crime.
Is it? Because, like, women who kill are almost always going to use poison of some kind. That's poison.
But poison, no one's gonna think to, like, look up, like, plant fertilizer, like maybe they just didn't wash their produce.
Maybe. You could be onto something. I don't know.
I don't have any enemies, so I can't ever test.
You don't have any enemies?
Okay. I don't have any enemies.
You sweet angel.
I'm perfect.
Perfect angel.
Kind to everyone I meet.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to A Little Bit Poison Your Friends.
Oh, fun.
You like that?
License. I like it spicy.
It's a little bit grim, but spicier.
Yeah. And welcome to, wait, what is this episode? This is Cults.
Cults.
Okay, great.
Spooky, so this spooky cults.
Comes out on the 27th. Yes.
Yes.
Cool.
Yesterday was Thanksgiving.
Yes. And in real time, it's the 18th. And today it would have been my mama's birthday.
Happy birthday, Joni.
Happy birthday, Joni. So I thought it would be fun if I read like a little bit of a Scorpioscope today.
Ooh.
For you.
Yes.
So this will also be for you, Jenny. But today I thought it would be fun just because it's mom's birthday to read her horoscope for the day. And I found a really good one for her.
Okay.
From horoscope.com. Very original. Often fiery temperaments like yours are drawn to fight for great causes, despite the better judgment of more down-to-earth people.
White Taylor.
Yes. As a result, you have a great leadership potential that may emerge today. Your courage, enthusiasm, and vigor will be contagious when you climb into your onto your soapbox.
Why do I feel like that horoscope is trying to tell us to start a cult?
Good plan.
Vibes.
I like it.
Culty vibes.
It's an energy.
Happy birthday, Joni.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Mom.
So what's new in your little corner of the table over there?
I survived a quarantine, like, by myself. I had to quarantine for 10 days alone. It was terrible. It was so horrible.
Was it worse than the first round of quarantine?
Yeah, because I actually thought I was sick this time.
Yeah.
And it turns out I just had a really bad ear infection. But so I am on antibiotics now. But there for a minute, I was like, this is it. This is how it ends.
We were on high alert
yes.
for a short moment.
Yeah, it was rough. We actually had to cancel our first recording, mm-hmm. and none of you noticed.
Not a single soul, because we never miss an episode.
Right. So I think we are going to reevaluate mashups.
Uh-huh.
Stay tuned. They might be back. They might not. Let us know if you have strong feelings about it.
Nobody said anything.
Nobody said anything. About... So that's making me think that nobody had strong feelings.
Yes.
So that was the episode we missed. But one of us would have to actually be dead in order for us to miss a regular cycle episode.
Yes.
So we were very fortunate to have been very organized for us. And we're...
this is a very relative type of organization.
Yes. Where we had recorded and were able to... I was able to be home and just edit by myself. And
this is like podcast behind the scenes.
Yeah. So it was fine.
Taylor survived.
It was fine. But how are you over in your side of the world?
I'm good. I had high level anxiety about your potential illness.
Yes.
That I made myself get sick.
Yeah.
And I caught a little cold for a couple days.
We hadn't even seen it. We'd seen each other one day.
Yes.
And I found out I had gotten exposed.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
2 days after I saw Jenny, and I was like, F our whole lives.
So then I panicked.
Yeah.
For no reason, as per our style.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And gave myself a cold about it.
You know who did not panic, and it was very surprising to me?
Who?
My husband.
Really?
Ryan had zero panic about it, and he is level 10 panicked about coronavirus. Like, extra hard panicked about it.
Was he like ostrich in the sand?
No, he was just like, it's okay. Like, you're not going anywhere. If I've got it, I've already got it.
Right.
And he was like, I feel fine. And I was like, this is very strange coming from such a hypochondriac. Like, that man will hear a sneeze in an airport and immediately have the sniffles himself.
Check himself into ready med.
Absolutely. So I was like kind of preparing, and I was kind of not like showing that I wasn't feeling like super great
yeah.
to him the whole time, because I was just like, I do not want him to think that I am like as sick as I feel.
We cannot spiral.
No, but he was totally fine the whole time. And I was like, okay,
cool.
This is interesting.
But that's so much time for kitty snuggles.
Oh, it was so nice. It was good. I honestly... We're probably going to get locked back down if we're not locked back down by the time this episode comes out.
Do you think we will?
I think so. Today, two areas in Ohio locked back down, like stay-at-home orders. And I think it's coming.
I think it'll happen after the first of the year.
I don't know.
Let us know, you in the future, listening to this, which is the present for you. Ow. It made my brain hurt.
Future you is the present for now you.
The me right now for future me will be past me.
Okay. That was a cosmic spiral in my head.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm having an existential crisis about it. I don't even remember what I was saying.
Anyway.
Anyway, today is a cult episode.
Yeah.
We're so glad that you are here, a part of our little teeny tiny podcast cult.
Yeah, welcome to A Little Bit Grim. I'm Taylor, that's Jenny over there, and we are excited for cult day. Is it my turn first, or is it you first?
I think it's me turn.
Okay, great. Ooh, we're back to the phone.
We are back to the phone. You can tell when I do my research on the go like a modern woman. I'm busy.
Yes.
Sitting getting my oil change, just like casually searching. Or
just
for
a tippity type up.
Just a little tippity copy paste edit kind of thing here. Okay, so as per usual, I can't follow directions.
Oh no.
And my cult is actually classified as a hate group.
I am really excited about this. You teased me. You teased me like 3 weeks ago that this was coming as a future cult. I am so interested in how these massively dickhead people find each other.
Oh, not only do they find each other, but they make a giant crime syndicate. So this has one singular...
Not a vibe.
No, not a vibe. One singular source, the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Okay.
So, the Aryan Brotherhood,
oh!
also known as the Brand Alice Baker, AB, or 1-2, is the nation's oldest major white supremacist prison gang and national crime syndicate.
It's a prison gang?
It's a prison.
I had no idea.
Oh, I learned so many awful juicy facts.
Okay.
About the Aryan Brotherhood.
Tell me everything. Tell me every single one of them.
So they were founded in 1964 by Irish bikers as a form of protection for white inmates in the newly desegregated prisons.
Okay.
The AB is today the largest and deadliest prison gang in the United States with an estimated 20,000 members inside prisons and on the streets.
I can't make my eyes wide enough to take in that information.
There's so many of these shitty, shitty people.
Oof, my face just got hot.
Mm-hmm. It's going to get hotter.
All right.
The motto is simple. Blood in, blood out. It's their motto.
Not good.
It's a terrible motto.
That's bad.
Just keep all
blood inside you.
Inside your own self.
Don't worry about anybody else's blood. How
Leave
about that?
Leave their blood alone. Be concerned with your own
yes.
blood first. AB chapters can be found in most major federal and state prisons in the country. As a crime syndicate, the AB participates in drug trafficking, male prostitution rings, gambling, extortion inside prison walls. On the streets, the AB is involved in practically every kind of criminal enterprise, including murder for hire, armed robbery, gun running, methamphetamine manufacturing, heroin sales, counterfeiting, and identity theft.
That's quite the list.
Quite the list. In their own words, quote, "An Aryan brother is without a care. He walks where the weak and heartless won't dare. And if by chance he should stumble and lose control, his brothers will be there to help reach his goal. For a worthy brother, no need is too great. He need not but ask fulfillment's his fate. For an Aryan brother, death holds no fear. Vengeance will be his through his brothers still here."
Okay. Hear me out. If you didn't know how absolutely heinously horrible these guys were, that's like not a bad little rhyme.
Well, that's how cults are.
It's not a bad ditty.
They don't loop you in with like the, "We're crazy and we make meth and we sell drugs and we
also kill people and like kill sport. People
and we're racist." No, they get you in with like group bonding and it's like a social collaboration of like-minded.
Fall exercises.
Thank you. Like, yeah, trust falls. But no, you're going to run drugs.
Like, we're going to go to a summer camp and we're going to go through this obstacle course.
Obstacle course.
Obstacle course.
Technically, a prison is an obstacle course.
Not the fun kind.
For the Aryan Brotherhood, murder is a way to make a social statement. If black people attack white people, we send a message. We go pick one of their shot callers. We catch them walking across the prison yard under guard escort in handcuffs. It don't matter. We're going to butcher him in front of God and everybody at high noon in the middle of the yard. And it's not just going to be a few clean stab marks. It's going to be a vicious, brutal killing. Because that's how brothers take care of business. And a brother's work is never done. Which was a quote from an interview with an imprisoned ex-AB commissioner, John Greshner. Commissioner.
Do they have like a hierarchy?
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Here, I have a couple more quotes. It's okay. A criminal organization. We need to be clear on that. Is there racism? You bet there's racism. Is it dominant? No. Said Michael Thompson, National Geographic Explorers Aryan Brotherhood. He was a leader, so he didn't make it up to commissioner, but he was a leader of his, like, local unit.
Well, did National Geographic have to do with that?
That's who posted the
Oh, I thought you said he worked for National Geographic.
Oh, no.
I had many concerns.
That's where the article came from.
All right.
Okay, so when officials began to desegregate state and federal prisons during the 1960s, black and white inmates were thrown up against each other in many cases for the first time. And violent conflicts resulted. The Aryan Brotherhood was formed at the San Quentin State Prison in California in 1964, organizing defensively against a violent black prison gang, the Black Guerrilla Family, and becoming the first major white supremacist prison gang in the country in the process. Its original membership was largely Irish bikers who initially called themselves the Diamond Tooth Gang, because members wore shards of glass in their teeth.
What?
Mm-hmm.
How?
I'm assuming if, like, you're an Irish biker, there's not a whole lot of teeth, and you can probably just, like, put, like, a piece of glass in there in case you need to pull it out and, like...
Disgusting.
Slice and dice. I don't know.
Okay, we'll have to Google it.
Well, yeah. My Google history is strange enough.
Accurate.
Mm-hmm. But after merging with other white cliques in San Quentin, they renamed themselves the AB. So a bunch of, like, smaller white supremacist groups in the prison all joined forces.
What a scary time.
It's awful. It's fucking terrifying. Today, the gang operates both inside and outside prisons. Although it is clearly a white supremacist ideology, it is above all a criminal enterprise. Given the choice between making money and showing their racism, members virtually always go for the cash, meaning the gang has often worked with Latino and other gangs for profit. Before joining the AB, potential recruits are required to, quote, make their bones, usually by attacking or murdering a rival gang member or assaulting a corrections officer, thus the blood in part of the gang's motto. Blood out indicates that once a person is a part of the group, the only way out is death. Inductees have been required to read Hitler's Mein Kampf and often Sun Tzu's The Art of War and Machiavelli's The Prince. Many members practice Asatru, a neo-pagan variant of pre-Christian Odinism that dates back to the Vikings and their Norse gods. Its adherents see themselves as ancient Viking warriors destined for Valhalla. This group, side note, is also known as neo-paganism.
Okay.
During the early 1970s, the California Department of Corrections noticed a startling increase in gang-related and racially motivated violence. Although the AB was not responsible for all the reported deaths and assaults, it quickly earned a reputation for its zero-tolerance policy on disrespect from other inmates. At the same time, the AB signed on to a truce with another notorious racist prison gang, the Mexican Mafia, or La M.A. In that group's battle with La Nuestra Familia, another Latino gang, early evidence that AB was more interested in profit than ideological purity.
Hmm.
By 1975, the Aryan Brotherhood had expanded into most California state prisons where something of a race war was being waged. Within 2 years, moreover, as a number of high-ranking AB leaders were sent to federal prison, the group had seized the opportunity to begin to expand into the federal penitentiary system. As a result, the organization divided into the California AB and the Federal System AB. They're like two related but different crime families.
What?
They each have their own ruling commission, but they are allies. At the same time, the group was growing. While there were fewer than 100 members in the late 1970s, hundreds more were recruited in following years, sometimes by swallowing whole racist skinhead gangs. Today, according to officials, there are a total of about 20,000 AB members, with large numbers present in both state and federal prisons. In its early days, the Aryan Brotherhood employed a one-man, one-vote policy.
Huh?
Yep. This changed in the early 1980s after it became clear this policy was causing chaos within the organization. Both the federal and state prison gang factions implemented a hierarchical structure similar to that of the military. A 12-man council was sworn in with a majority vote. A 3-man commission oversaw the council. Michael Thompson, one of the quotes that I quoted earlier, served on the California Council, while Barry Mills, T.D. Bingham, and John Greshner, before he quit the group in 1999, oversaw the federal side of the Brotherhood. Tightening the command structure made the gang more powerful and more dangerous.
Yikes.
On October 22, 1983, AB member Tommy Silverstein stabbed corrections officer Merle E. Klutz to death in the Marion, Ohio Federal Penitentiary with the help of another inmate. Hours after Klutz was murdered, another AB member, Clayton Fountain, stabbed corrections officer Robert Hoffman and assaulted two other officers because he did not want Silverstein to have a higher body count than him.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
At the time, the Marion facility was believed to be the most secure federal prison in the country. In response to the incident, federal prisons across the country began to move known AB members to supermax units or prisons around the country. These inmates were typically held in solitary confinement 23 hours a day, and their contact with other inmates and outsiders was severely restricted. But even this did not stop the AB from carrying out its criminal activities. Several court cases have made clear that AB leaders are able to organize major criminal activities, including ordering people's death, despite their isolation. In many cases, officials say they do this through their wives or girlfriends, and in some, they have been able to use their lawyers. In others, they are known to use highly sophisticated written codes and invisible inks.
Oh my gosh! Mm-hmm. Okay, Spy Kid.
Right, thank you. Shark Boy and Lava Girl, at it again! During the 1990s, the rapidly swelling AB increasingly favored organized criminal activity over promoting racism. That meant that the gang's leaders recognized that drug trafficking in prison was a highly profitable enterprise, and the gang began to sell drugs to African-American and Latino inmates. According to imprisoned ex-AB commissioner John Greshner, who left the gang in 1999, race war ideology within the AB today is clearly secondary to its criminal activity. Greshner has also detailed how the gang instituted a sophisticated banking collection system that included a 20% tax on the profits of any AB criminal enterprise on the streets.
We got taxes?
You gotta pay a tax to the commissioner. The money is laundered and controlled by the commissioners, whether state or federal. Wrap your brain around this.
Who's keeping these books?
The commissioners.
But they're in jail.
Invisible inks.
Decoder rings. They have to have decoder rings.
Oh my fucking
God. How?
Oh my God. It's...
How did you get enough lemon juice to make the invisible ink?
I feel like Nicolas Cage is like, it's on the back of the Constitution. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some shit on the back of the Constitution. Okay, so the AB's criminal operations on the outside received a huge boost when Italian-American mafia boss John Gotti was sentenced to life in prison without parole and transferred to the Marion facility in 1992. Gotti hired the AB to protect him, but went on to organize a business partnership between his associates and AB members on the outside. The move gave the AB unprecedented power on the streets, where the group had been operating a major city since the 1980s, with an appointed leader in each city, or in the case of a more sparsely populated areas, each region.
Hmm.
So they had like district and regional managers.
Oh no.
I know.
Who's the vice president of operations here?
I would like to send him an email. He fucking sucks. Gotti was not the gang's first high profile client. During the early 1970s, cult leader Charles Manson sought the AB's protection.
Of course.
Of course. He was refused membership because he declined to kill other inmates because of their skin color.
I'm shocked.
I'm also shocked. Didn't he try to start a...
tried to start a race war.
Wasn't that the whole helter-skelter?
Helter-skelter. But he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do it himself. He wanted the race war to start so that everybody would like come to him and be like, you is God.
Right. Our leader.
But he did not want to get his hands dirty.
No. Which explains his whole case anyway. If you haven't listened to that mashup episode, go back and listen to it.
Yeah. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
So they just, he wouldn't kill somebody, so they said, sorry, bud.
Mm-mm.
No can do.
No can do. You cannot have membership. But the Brotherhood still use his assortment of female fans to smuggle drugs and weapons into San Quentin.
Those sweet babies.
Oh, they didn't know. They didn't know any better.
I think they did know better. I just think that they were pretty and nobody looked at them.
Lost souls. The AB is a notoriously deadly organization. Some years ago, authorities calculated that while the group's members made up less than 0.1% of the U.S. prison inmate population, they were responsible for 18% of all prison murders.
Wow.
Staggering.
I thought you were going to say they are 1/10 of the prison population. No, they are 1/10 of 1%.
They are less than 1/10 of 1% of the entire prison population.
So these people kill for sport.
For sport. Blood in, blood out. That's their whole motto. Power, control, and money.
I am scared.
It's terrifying.
There's too many of them. That is way too many. Less than 1/10 of 1% is too many.
It's too many. Especially too many for them to kill
18%
of all prison murders.
Well, they had a hand in the Lucasville prison riot too.
Oh yeah. Weren't they one of the
They were one of the groups that decided to
organize.
Organize.
Wow. In recent years, authorities have been repeatedly frustrated by the way that imprisoned AB leaders have been able to organize and direct major criminal enterprises, even from solitary confinement where most are held. In 2002, they moved to indict 29 leaders of the federal AB organization, all of them held in various prisons around the country, for violations of Federal Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. 21 of the leaders were charged with death penalty offenses, even though many were already serving life terms, because prosecutors felt that that was the only way they could stop their criminal activities. Among those charged with capital offenses were AB commissioners Mills and Bingham. But the tactic failed spectacularly when juries returned many convictions but no death penalties. The official so-called decapitation strike had failed.
Ugh.
Right.
So now they're just mad.
So now they're mad. Mm-hmm. And you, like, expose them because they had to, like, go to court and, like, be transported around. And now you just gave them, like, more of an audience
mm-hmm.
to be exposed to. So, members of the AB typically can be easily identified by their tattoos. Popular tattoos among AB members include a shamrock inscribed with the number 666, swastikas, the abbreviation AB, and a double lightning bolt, which stands for Hitler's SS. All of the information came from one single source, the Southern Poverty Law Center. The SPLC is a catalyst for racial justice in the South and beyond, working in partnership with communities to dismantle white supremacy, strengthen intersectional movements, and advance the human rights of all people. They monitor hate groups and other extremists throughout the United States and expose their activities to the public, the media, and law enforcement. Their mission is to help teachers and schools educate children and youth to be active participants in a diverse society. They actively seek justice for the most vulnerable people. The SPLC has a podcast called Sounds Like Hate.
Oh, wow.
It is an audio documentary series about the dangers and peril of everyday people who engage in extremism and ways to disengage them from a life of hatred.
I'll put their website in our show notes.
Yes, please do. So stop what you're doing. Go and listen. If you are a person of privilege, it is your responsibility to go out and fight the good fight. Engage your family, distant relatives, friends, acquaintances in conversation about civil liberties and equal rights for all marginalized groups.
Mm-hmm.
Fight the good fight. Speak up.
Do the things.
Do the things. Be good. Have love in your heart.
Yeah. Wow. That is intensely bad.
Intensely bad. And I thought when I was like, I'm going to do a hate group, I thought I was just going to, like, segue away from cults for a second.
Yeah. But,
like, the
no,
deeper,
that's a cult.
That's a cult is what it is.
Yeah.
It's scary how organized, really awful
humans can be.
Humans can be. It's terrifying.
No. No, that's... I'm out on that. Thanks, though.
Yeah.
Blood in, blood out. I'm just straight up out.
No blood needed. Keep the blood out of it.
Keep it in its original container.
Please keep all blood where it originally belongs.
Right.
AJ Frund, Alyssa Guernsey, Thomas Valva, Trayana Somerville, Noah Tomlin, Arabella Parker. What do these kids have in common? They were fundamentally failed by the very people they trusted with their lives. This is Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane. During each weekly episode, I'll dive deep into a different case of child abuse murder, often including audio clips and conducting interviews with family members or other major players in the cases I cover. Calling attention to these tragic stories can lead to positive changes in the systems designed to protect children. These kids deserve to have their stories told and their voices heard. Subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on your favorite podcast platform.
Okay, so my cult today is also extra gross. So,
oh, good.
It's not going to be a lighthearted day. I'm so sorry.
Sorry about ya.
Sorry, it's...
You'll be fine.
Gross.
You'll be fine.
I'm
this
sure.
is why you're here.
Right. You know, want a little bit of grossness in your life.
I mean,
don't
you
lie.
You really do. The worst thing is when, like, you're listening to a true crime podcast and the host comes on and they're like, due to the graphic nature of this crime, I'm going to skip over the details. And I'm like, give me.
Oh, no, I want to know about it.
Give me the extra gross details.
Right. So I'm going to give you the extra gross details. And
thank you.
I'm just going to apologize over it.
Okay.
But still give it to you. So.
Okay. Give it to me, Taylor.
What was that?
You don't know that song?
No.
Okay, never mind. Okay. Taylor, cut that out.
Okay. Okay, so the cult I am doing is called The Family of God. It sounds so wholesome. Sounds so good. It's not. My sources were the Cults and Extreme Beliefs show and then xfamily.org. And xfamily.org is massive. And it is a group of people that are dedicated to doing research about this cult.
Oh.
So they have newspaper clippings. They have books that I'll talk about during this. They have everything that you can think of on the internet is on this website.
Okay.
So I would highly recommend going there if you're interested in learning more.
Okay.
So our cult leader, his name is David Berg, and he was born February 18th, 1919 in Oakland, California. He was the youngest of three children, and his parents were evangelist Christians.
Oh, great.
And David spent his childhood traveling with his parents while they practiced their ministry.
Hmm. Wholesome.
It's never that wholesome.
It never is.
He gets married to Jane Miller in 1944, and they have four children together. So other than traveling with his parents, we don't really know a whole lot about how he grew up, other than it was relatively poor.
Okay.
So the traveling ministries like that, they would normally get put up in churches, and they would spend nights in the churches.
Oh.
And because they traveled, they didn't always have food. So he grew up being very poor, and that affected his life when it came to spending money.
Oh, okay.
Which we'll talk about later. So in 1960s, David comes out as a sort of a visionary. And in 1968, Berg founded a group he named Teens for Christ in Huntington Beach, California.
Gross. I thought you were going to say Huntington, India, and I'm like, that sounds right.
It sounds good. I just had so many flashbacks to youth group.
Oh my gosh, campus life!
Yeah, just beware about any group that
is trying too hard to indoctrinate you.
It's culty.
Culty. It is.
Too culty for my liking.
Mm-hmm. If somebody's working that hard to recruit you into something, be concerned with what they're doing with all their spare time.
Absolutely.
Who has the time to recruit people?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody. I don't even want to talk with morals.
Like at the gas station.
No.
Especially.
Please don't.
No.
So the group would go through many name changes through the years. It was known as the Children of God, the Family of Love, or just the Family. And today it is known as the Family International.
Okay.
Berg's mission was to gather followers to help him spread the love of Jesus. He asked his followers to devote themselves full time to this mission. At the beginning, the group was very puritanical. So no hand-holding, no kissing, not a zilp zitch.
Boo.
However,
this is my least favorite kind of cult.
It's about to get much worse.
Okay.
However, in the 1970s, it started to become clear that the leaders of the group were leading a double life where they were extremely sexually active.
Oh.
Of course.
Aren't they all?
They're all. All of them. Of course, he started preaching about the end times, the Antichrist, and the New World Order.
Blah, blah, blah. We've heard this before.
Yep, same old same. He called himself many things, including King David.
Oh.
Moses.
Oh.
Mo. Just plain Mo.
I'm not a regular prophet. I'm a cool prophet.
And Moses David. Father David. And the worst yet, Dad or Grandpa.
Daddy David.
I can't. David believed in seclusion and secrecy and wasn't often around his following. He would communicate with them via letters he called Mo letters.
Give me Mo letters.
Mo letters, son.
Mo letters, pop.
He needs Mo medication, if you ask me. I'm sorry.
Come on, Taylor, tell me Mo.
I just remembered what some of these letters are called. Okay. In a letter entitled, I Got a Split. I'm not kidding.
Split by what?
I got a split.
Oh, I got a split. I got a split. Blue Skidoo, we can't do.
Oh, God. like, I gotta dip. So he sent this letter in 1970, and he explains that he will be living apart from the group. So he literally left.
Dear y'all, I'm Audi 3000.
Yeah. Catch you on the flip side.
Catch you on the flip flop.
Around this time, the group was gaining more attention as a cult. So he saw all of these happenings and just kind of said to himself, I'm just going to hide behind this veil of secrecy. Nobody can find me. And he moves to a mountain somewhere.
What is he, the fucking Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Ignore the man behind the mountain.
Throughout his time as leader, he wrote nearly 3,000 letters to his followers.
Chill.
Uh-huh. And you can find all of them on xfamily.org.
Really?
You can read them all.
Ew. Are they gross?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
That was a dumb question.
They're gross.
I know they're gross.
The letters normally instruct the following on how to live and be right with God. He would often go on wild tirades about what he perceived to be evil in the world. Some examples were mainstream churches.
Okay.
Pedophilia laws.
What?
Capitalism and Jewish people.
Oh.
Yucky.
When you think of, like, the broad topics that, like, cults really zone in on, generally it's one of those.
Not but, like, all of them.
It's a weird... All four things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All together. It's a weird flavor. I don't like it.
A 23-year-old woman named Karen Zerbe joined the group and quickly became David's personal secretary.
Oh, did she?
Mm-hmm. An affair started shortly after she joined, despite the 27-year age gap.
Ew.
And David remained married to Jane, but of course she fell to the wayside, and he brought Karen on as his second wife.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
There we go.
Poor Jane. She, in 1944, did not sign up for this.
No, let her go. Does she even want to be there?
She, like, leaves after this.
Good.
So Karen takes over as, like, second wife, and at some point, Karen just kind of pieces out with her kids and says, never mind.
Okay. She got off.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
So one of the ways that they would gain new members is something they called love bombing, where they would invite people to worship, and everyone would come up to new people and hug them and tell them that they were loved and that they loved them and that this is a place for love and worship and all these warm, fuzzy feelings.
Ew.
And it was a very powerful technique for anyone who is struggling with their family lives and feeling like they weren't loved at home.
Well, sure. Those are the people who are going to be most likely to join a cult.
Yeah. So that was one of their techniques.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
I would be, this is why I couldn't join a cult, because I would be so off put by that.
Absolutely.
Please do not physically touch me.
And it's like all of them at once, like would swarm a new person and all at once say, you're loved, God loves you, we love you, you're welcome here, you're wanted here. And I would panic. I would straight panic.
I would have a panic attack if that happened. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had, like, a coworker hug me today, and I was like,
okay. I was telling one of my friends yesterday, she said that she was so overwhelmed in her office because there were so many people there and everyone was talking at once. And we were at dinner and she just said, I really appreciate the volume in here because it's so low. And we were asking her what was going on. And she was like, I just couldn't take it anymore. Everybody was talking so loud. And I was like, honey, that's a sign of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Overstimulated.
Yeah. You just want everybody to shut up and calm down and want everything to be quiet. And she, wide-eyed, looked at me and was like, I had no idea that that was an anxiety trigger.
You've had so much therapy.
I was like, yeah, girl, it's okay. You just gotta go outside and take a breath.
Also, I really love that compliment. I appreciate the volume with which you speak to me.
At first, I'm normally told that I'm loud. And I was like, oh, I was probably being too loud. And that was like a little bit of like the reverse.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so sorry, please tell me if I'm being loud. And she's like, no, this is not what this was. Okay. Truly, I'm glad that it was being like relatively quiet in here. Okay, anyway, bring it back to this terrible cult. Of course, when you joined, you had to sign away all of your worldly possessions,
as you do,
to become one fully with the group. They did not believe in traditional family roles, so when families joined, the children were instructed to stop calling their parents mom and dad, but instead call everyone aunt and uncle.
What?
Right, so they did not want all these family roles.
Oh, they're trying to like dissolve the borders of your family and blend you into the greater group.
Yep.
Okay. Sneaky. That's a sneaky tactic.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one before.
Yeah, no.
In the Branch Davidians in Waco, they did something kind of like that, where any adult was allowed to punish any child, but they still had like mother and father roles. It was just kind of like the punishments were blurred. Mm-hmm. But this was the first time I'd heard that you were not allowed to call your mom and dad. Like, you had to call everyone aunt and uncle.
I don't care for that, but okay.
I do not like it. By 1972, the group had over 130 communes worldwide.
Whoa.
Yes.
That's a lot.
Too many.
How many members did they have?
I think I have a number later on. The communes were in Portugal, Japan, Brazil, Argentina, California, Colorado, and Texas, just to name a few.
Wow.
They would send children and teens all over the world to evangelize for the group, but when they got to the location, their passports would be taken from them, so they never knew exactly where they were. The children spent the days doing God's work, air quotes, so they did not go to school and did not get an education. They spent the days singing and dancing in the streets for tips and scraps of food.
Wow.
Yep. David grew up very poor, like I said, so he always practiced frugality and really wanted his followers to do the same, but it ended up just falling to the children because they knew that people would give money and food to children without really thinking about it.
Because they're just little babies.
They're babies.
Help the babies.
The women in the group were given a super suspicious task.
Okay.
They were commanded to go out and seduce men to get them to join the group in the name of God.
What?
Uh-huh.
So, what? Oh, I'm so sorry.
There's a lot of words I'm about to say that are make your eyes gonna get big.
I need you to pause because I can't get over seduce men in the name of God.
It's gonna get worse.
Okay.
It's gonna get more, like, creepy, crawly. You're gonna grow scales.
Bang him. It's the Lord's commandment.
Yep.
Okay, go on.
At first, it was just go charm any man, and then it became look for men with power and influence.
Okay.
And they were forbidden from using any kind of protection during these seductions.
So he actually wanted them to sleep with them.
Yes.
Oh.
They wanted them to fuck in the name of the Lord for little baby cult babies.
Can you make that a soundbite?
Yes.
But, oh, listen, there's a lot of scary things that can happen to you when you hook up with a stranger at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, you never know, like, hopefully they leave. You don't want to make breakfast for them. You want to, you never, like, what if he, like, doesn't cut his toenails or, like, whatever.
And then it goes, like, STDs, STIs.
Unwanted
diseases, unwanted pregnancies.
Crazy family. You
never know. But then you go into cult land. What if he's a part of a cult? What if you're going to get kidnapped? And what if you wake up in 10 years with four more babies and you're in a cult?
From this dude that you just met at the bar down the road.
At the quarter pocket.
Because you were trying to have, like, a little...
Shenanigans. A little fun.
Shenanigans. Horrifying. I cannot put into words how much I hate it. I have never heard such a parable for not hooking up with strangers in my entire life.
Do you want to know what they called this activity?
Oh, I bet it was gross.
Yeah.
What is it?
Flirty fishing.
Listen, that fish was asking for it.
And he called his women his flirty fishes.
No!
Yikes on several bites.
Oh my god.
Oh god.
My little flirty little blub blub fishy boys.
We need video for this. There's no way to describe what's happening right now.
My god.
Okay.
I'm so... grossed out.
It's really not great.
Flirty fishing.
Flirty fishing.
Okay. It's a weird trade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But respect. Okay, go on.
Karen Zerbe was one of these women, and she met a man in the Canary Islands and ended up having a son by him, and she named him Ricky Rodriguez, and he was also known as Davidito, which is like little David.
Okay.
Father David adopted Ricky, and he was happy to have a child that he could use as an example on how to raise a child.
Oh, no.
I'm going to give you a big, fat, fat spoiler. This is not how to raise a child. And poor Ricky ends up having a really fucking horrible life.
Okay.
When David would send out his letters with the policies and instructions on how to live, not only were the adults expected to adhere to the teachings, but so were children of all ages.
Okay.
This was particularly concerning when Father David sent out a letter entitled The Law of Love, saying that love was to be shared by everyone, no matter their age.
Oh, we really took a 180 mm-hmm. here from the
puritanical days.
Yeah, from the abstinence
yes.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So David Berg's narrative was that there was only one law of God, the law of love. God equals love and love equals sex.
Oh. Well, I would contest that, but continue.
Having sex was how you showed God's love to another person.
Oh.
Sus.
Okay.
So everyone got this letter. It was passed out. Even the younger children knew what this meant, that they would be expected to have sex with anyone and everyone who desired it.
What?
Mm-hmm. They taught the girls that it was a privilege to have sex with the men. And by the age of 12, the girls were placed on sharing schedules.
What?
I'm telling you, it's...
Like a brothel.
Yes. Fucking gross.
Oh my God. Is this dude dead?
Big gross.
Ugh.
Yes.
Okay.
But the cult is not.
Cult still happens?
Yeah. It's under the name of the Family International.
Do they still adhere by these rules?
They say they do not.
That's a fucking lie.
But it's a lie. Full blown.
Okay. Go on.
One of the girls, Christina, was taken into a room with a couple, and she felt like she did not have a choice. Obviously, she was 12. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, she said that there was something wrong with her because she didn't like it, and that she felt like she was, like, not right with God.
Oh, my God.
That's how ingrained this icky, horrible pedophile ring went.
Hold on, that might, like, bring a tear to my eye. That is so fucking disgusting.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And she was in the Cults and Extreme Beliefs television show that I watched. And luckily, she was able to get out. She's gotten a lot of therapy, enough to be able to talk about it and okay. warn people about what kind of a cult this is. So I had warmth in my heart knowing that she is probably not okay, but at least surviving.
Yes.
And speaking out against this, but this is so horrible. It was not just the girls who were raped, molested, and abused. Boys did not get a pass. In fact, the abuse is detailed in the book called The Story of Davidito, which is 762 pages of absolute fucking ick. The guide on how to raise children, and it makes my stomach turn and skin crawl just thinking about it.
God.
The book begins by showing Ricky, like all other children, doing childlike things, being on the swings, playing with toys, being a child. However, by the time that he was 5 years old, he was sexually abused by the group. He was raised by nannies who were instructed to introduce Ricky to sex at a very young age. We are talking infantile.
Oh my God.
This boy did not stand a absolute chance.
No.
So.
Oh my fucking God.
They took photos of him and the nannies and published them in this book for all to see.
What?
Mm-hmm. This was their guide on what they wanted for all children. This was not a secret. This was not something that they hid behind doors, was hush-hush. This was out in the open.
I will never understand the way that people are brainwashed. Regular human being, just people out. Joe Schmo out in the world after being like in this group for so long, losing all of the morality to perpetrate crimes against children like this. How does that happen? I need an explanation.
I would also like an explanation. Unfortunately, I do not have one for you. By 1986, the membership grew to over 10,000 followers. And this second generation is who started to resist. So it's the children of the granola hippies that thought they were going into this puritanical type of a cult
God
and
is love,
somehow
group.
Spiraled into depravity.
Oh my God. Good. So these are the children who have been abused.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. It's amazing for children who are not educated and not allowed to interact with the outside world that they all came together and was like, this is fucked up.
Yes. Because it's fucked up.
Right. But this is all they knew. And I just think it's fascinating that
it's so ingrained.
It's so ingrained. Like, they were born in this cult and had no means of education. Were often living in
squalor.
Different countries.
Oh, God.
In these communes. They could not communicate with anybody outside of this. They were not allowed TV. They were not allowed books. Anything outside of the cult was forbidden. So for these young children to have that inherent sense of this is wrong, to be able to stand up to their parents is super fascinating to me.
Yeah, it is.
They made a camp for teenagers who rebelled or doubted the teachings. So they made a mistake. They put them all together. Christina and her brother were sent away to one of these camps, and they trained to be a part of, and I quote, the army. This place was called the Jumbo, which was the largest compound in the Philippines. It was surrounded by barbed wire and armed guards. The teens were made to confess and fast until they were deemed clean enough to be a part of the group. A 15-year-old named Jemima was sent to the Jumbo, not because her faith wavered. She was actually very steadfast in her faith, but she was perceived as being frivolous, and she was spunky, funny, silly, and full of life.
Oh, but she had too much personality. She had too much joy.
Yep.
Let's squash that out of you real quick.
So that was considered to be trouble, so they sent her away. Anyone who didn't fall in line was severely punished with boards, spankings to make the children confess or apologize. At the end of the punishment, they would change their name, so you had to feel like a new person. So it was like you left your old person behind.
And now you're reborn. Ugh. Yuck.
Christina's brother was put into solitary confinement, beaten, and starved for having impure thoughts. What kind of impure thoughts could a teenager be having that would be worse than child rape? I am confused. I have questions.
How? Probably about, like, when are we going to have lunch?
How are we going to get out of here?
Right.
SOS.
Is there anything other than this miserable life that I was born into?
Probably.
Yes.
As children, the members were told that crying was manipulation, so they had to smile through their punishments, and they were not allowed to cry no matter what.
What?
Not allowed to cry. 0%.
Oh my God.
The devil. The
Ooh,
devil.
He comes in sheep's clothing.
Many people ask, well, why don't you just leave? Well, first, remember, they don't have their passports or any identification. They don't have any money because their whole family is wrapped up in this. And sometimes they don't even know what country they're in. And to top it all off, they fully believed that if they left, God would punish them.
It's like the Kingston clan.
Yep. All of the training camps abruptly closed in 1988, and David Berg died at the age of 75 in 1994. Ricky was only 19 and not ready to take the lead of the cult, so his mother Karen took over. Karen sent a letter saying that they no longer have to have sex with children or sleep with each other, but that was just a lie and everyone knew it. They there was a lot of news outlets starting to focus their light on this cult and say, this is a huge problem. This is a pedophile ring. This is incest is happening. Child pornography is happening. All of these things. So Karen, to try to just like swipe it away, released this letter saying that
she don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
I can't.
Ew.
Members who have since left the group said that they were told straight up that this letter was sent out to get the authorities off their backs.
Yep.
At 20 years old, Ricky travels to the communes around the world and sees how everyone lives. And he's like, fucking no.
Like, because he's probably in the most, I don't want to say like top tier, but like of all the existence, he all the money, he's the son of the leader, he's blah blah, everybody else is living in squalor.
He truly wanted to change the rules and make the cult a better place. He knew that it was a cult, but he really did not
want it to be
what it was.
Yeah.
He wanted to end the childhood sex exposure, to share the sharing of the women and the general badness. He tried to tell his mother his plans, but she wouldn't listen, and he wanted to be a normal man and live a normal life outside of the cult. So he leaves, and he gets married and has a child.
Good for him.
However, these deep-seated issues from his childhood are alive and well. Like David, when he was alive, Karen moves around a lot to keep the veil of secrecy. And Ricky doesn't ever know where she's at, so she even keeps that from him.
Okay.
In 2005, he hears that she is maybe living in Tucson, Arizona, so he goes to try to find her there, and he felt like if he could convince his mother, or he felt like he needed to find his mother and kill her and take her out so he could put an end to the whole cult.
Like, dismantle it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ricky makes a video that you can find, explaining his need for revenge and justice. The video is very unnerving. He sits at a kitchen table and holds up his weapons and explains his thought process behind needing to kill his mother.
Oh, God.
Ricky gets a hold of Karen's secretary, Angela, and Angela was also one of the nannies that played a part in Ricky's sexual abuse as a child. Angela came to Ricky's apartment, and Ricky tried to get the information out of Angela, but when he was unable to find out where his mother was living, there was a struggle, and Ricky lashed out and stabbed Angela and killed her.
Oh.
Ricky flees, but pulls over about 300 miles later and is found the next day. He died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. And Karen had convinced the authorities that the group had changed its ways, but the murder-suicide shined a brand new light on the group and raised a lot of suspicions once again.
Good.
Some of the former members started talking to authorities, but a lot of the crimes happened overseas, and the teens were kept in the dark so often that they rarely even knew where they were. And to this day, the group has been renamed the Family International and is still led by Karen Zerbe.
Fuck Karen.
That is all I have for you about the Family of God.
Boy, I'm glad that's the end, because I'm not sure how much more my heart could handle.
I'm sorry.
It was alive and well.
A lot. It was a lot.
God.
But Jemima, the one that was too, like, lively, she was a part of that interview as well. So she's in recovery and trying to make her life work. Mm. But, whoa.
Sweet honey bunny child.
Rough.
I feel so gross.
I'm so sorry. It's okay. I know. Cults will do that to you, man.
Yeah, they will. I would say even more than true crime, cults usually leave me feeling yuckier.
I think it's because it's so big.
Yeah, there's so many people.
There's so many people involved. True crime is normally one person absolutely losing their goddamn mind. Maybe a handful of people.
Mm-hmm.
But the cults are so purposeful and thought out, and they span decades and thousands so of damage. Followers.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are so hard to prosecute for some reason.
Right.
And
it's always, they never get them on, like, polygamy or sex with children. It's, like, racketeering.
Yeah.
And, like, tax fraud. Like, is this really all
we can do?
Is this all we got?
Oh, it's because we only care about money.
There you go.
Remember, we don't care about morals.
Get capitalism where it hurts.
Yeah.
Oh, we need a bright and shiny.
Okay, yeah. Do you have one?
I had one when we started the episode.
Okay.
And I can come up. Here's my bright and shiny.
What's that?
I am very excited because I am hosting my very first Thanksgiving.
That's so exciting. I'm so excited for you.
This episode will come out on the Friday after Thanksgiving, but I'm hosting mine on Saturday. So if you're listening to this right now, my Thanksgiving is tomorrow. Say a prayer for my turkey.
You were very concerned about it.
I'm very concerned about it. You can't mess up the turkey on Thanksgiving.
No, you can't. No. I know.
It'll be fine. What's yours?
Mine is that, Ryan is going to go on furlough for 3 weeks. So I'm going to have my hub and hone for three whole weeks. And I will get to sleep in the same bed with him for 27 days.
We are very excited for and Taylor's Hubbins.
I'm so happy. And he got me a thing. This is my second bright shiny. And I could not.
She's got two.
I know, I'm sorry. I came home the other day. And like when you walk into my house, my stairway is right there and I have a banister. And on the banister was this little pink octopus.
What?
Fluffy thing. It's like a stuffed animal. And it's like got a little happy face. And I like picked it up and I looked on like am like looking at it and I realized you can flip it inside out.
Oh.
And you flip it inside out and it's like a dark gray color with a sad face on it.
It's a mood octopus?
Yeah. And I was like, this is cute. And I didn't get to talk to him until the next day. And I was like, that was really cute. And he was like, yeah, I just thought I could give myself like an early warning system. So if you're mad at me, if you could just like switch it to the other side.
It's in the
water. I was like, okay, we'll play this game.
All right. You're just going to leave it at the end of the stairs.
Yeah, that's where it's living.
Listen, you know what? It's a good way of communication. It's tangible. It's physical. I love it.
So, yeah, that's my second one.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, follow us on the social meds.
Yeah, and if you have an ookie spooky story, crime story, cult story, disaster story, feel free to write in. And
did you start a cult? Were you in a cult? Let us know.
We want to know the details. At alittlebitgrim@gmail.com. And we are very excited for December. You'll find out next week. Christmas time.
I'm dreaming of a white.
I can't. All right. Okay. Goodbye.